Welcome to PASIG Practice Pearls, where performing arts physical therapists share their expertise and discuss some of the unique needs of keeping artists healthy.
Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Dr. Marissa Schaefer, and I am a licensed physical therapist, and I will be hosting this episode of PASIG's podcast. I'll be joined by Dr. Don Mucci, who is going to be talking about emergency medical response, specifically at Cirque du Soleil. She'll be talking about what it took to become a physio at Cirque du Soleil, about some of the emergency action plans, and much more. She shares some really interesting information, so I hope you all enjoy. Dr. Don Mucci is a dual-credentialed physical therapist and athletic trainer. Don has also achieved board certification for sports physical therapy and is also a certified strength and conditioning specialist. She received her BS in sports medicine from Central Michigan University, her MSPT degree from the University of Miami in Florida, go Canes, and her doctorate in physical therapy from the University of St. Augustine in Florida. Don has been a physical therapist for over 20 years, devoting her time and energy to the performing arts. Don started working with performers at Walt Disney World in Florida and was then transferred to Disney's The Lion King on Broadway in New York City, where she was the in-house physical therapist for the entire Broadway production. After completing her contract at Lion King, she joined Cirque du Soleil, working both in Las Vegas and on tour with Maester, Ka, Believe, Zarkana, and most recently, Drawn to Life. After nearly 10 years, Don left Cirque du Soleil and joined Stanford University's Orthopedic Outpatient Sports Medicine Clinic. As a senior physical therapist, she specialized in concussion and post-concussion syndrome. During her time at Stanford, Don enjoyed working with orthopedic residents and mentoring her colleagues in the treatment of concussions. After 3 years at Stanford, Don accepted the primary health care provider position at the Women's Tennis Association, or WTA, touring with professional tennis for 4 seasons. While at the WTA, Don coordinated the physicals program, special rankings, and was a member of the athletic care team. Don is also active on social media, serving as the public relations chairperson for the Performing Arts Special Interest Group for the American Physical Therapy Association. She is also a social media strategist for a PT clinic in D.C. When Don is not working, you can find her catching a sunset and enjoying the Florida beach views with her husband and dog. Hi, Don, and welcome to the PASIG podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for being one of our first interviews on the podcast. So we are going to start by just having you telling us a little bit about who you are. I mean, we've heard a little bit from your bio, but specifically how you got involved with Cirque du Soleil when you worked there.
Yeah, so I've been a performing arts PT for over 20 years. I actually started way back when at the Disney Sports Complex as an athletic trainer. And then I went to PT school and transitioned into the Disney Work Comp Clinic, where I only saw like the performers and the character, friends with characters and a lot of equity performers. And then I went up to New York and worked for Disney's Broadway, Lion King on Broadway, which was so much fun and just kind of opened a lot of doors. That's how I got into Cirque du Soleil. I was recruited go out to Vegas. I had made a couple contacts at a conference and they were interested in, you know, interviewing me. So I flew out to Vegas. This was back in 2004. So the company looked much different. It was very, very small and it only had a couple touring shows. And there were 2 shows in Vegas at the time, just Maester and O. They were opening Zumanity and Ka was getting ready to open as well. Now there were 6 shows pre-pandemic. And I worked for Cirque for 10 years out in Vegas. And then I toured for a long time. And then our tour actually went to Vegas and no longer toured. So that was kind of the end of my career at Cirque that I thought. I left and I went and worked at Stanford and worked at their concussion clinic. And I've had like a neuro partner and we really got their concussion clinic up and going, which was a super cool experience. And then I got recruited to go to women's tennis, cool, which was a total different lifestyle. Touring back again on the road, lots of weeks out of the year. So I did 4 seasons with the WTA. And then I'm a little bit too old to be touring. So, because I'd gotten married and
Yeah.
like it's just a harder
It
lifestyle.
is.
And so then the Disney Cirque du Soleil project was starting down in at Disney World in Orlando. And so I was already in Florida with tennis. I decided to go back and do the creation. And it's quite sad because we were literally hours from having our first audience, an invited audience of like 250.
Wow.
Pandemic hit literally that day. So
Sorry.
yeah, we're kind of just in a holding pattern, just waiting. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen. Hopefully it'll still open. Yeah. And that's kind of my career in a nutshell.
Awesome. Awesome. A lot of frontline work, which is, I mean, exactly why you're on this podcast. We're going to be talking to our listeners a lot about emergency response. And I'm sure that you're, as an AT in addition to a PT, like you are specifically suited to being a frontline person.
Yeah.
But I want you to, would you mind telling us a little bit about some of the extra training you had to go through to do your job like efficiently and effectively as a PT and AT at Cirque?
Yep. Yeah, so at Cirque, because a lot of our apparatus or structures are quite unique to the environment, it's not every day that a 911 call can go into a trapeze net and pull
Right.
somebody out. They definitely have like ladders and equipment, but we practice, we don't want to delay their hospital care. So if somebody has a serious injury, we actually practice, and it's a very, very well rehearsed emergency action plan for every single high risk apparatus. So for example, like a trapeze net, if somebody hits their head and is unconscious, we have to climb up there, get them, manage them, hold their C-spine stable, make sure they don't move as we drop the net. So there's a whole process that includes the technical side, automation, backstage, stage management, all the traffic flow, communication to 911. Everything's very, very scripted, and everybody has a very specific role because you don't want an emergency to happen, and that's when you decide, oh, I'm going to communicate to 911. Oh, I'm going to be the one managing the net drop. Like everything is all very choreographed. Depending on which show, we usually practice an emergency plan once a month. Sometimes, like the show I was just with, we would do like 4 or 5 hour blocks, and we'd run through all of the like the procedures in one big swoop, which is kind of a lot. It's very physically demanding as well.
Sure.
Like you're climbing ladders, you're holding C-spine in these awkward positions, so you have to do a spine board, you have to lift. It's a lot of practice. And as far as like education, so obviously athletic training, it's very helpful because I had to learn all the spine boarding techniques and spine. And then actually at Cirque, we used to do EMT classes. And actually we went through the whole process. Had to go do like the ambulance ride along, the emergency room hours. And then what really helped us is we learned extra techniques like oxygen and all these other things. They no longer do that because everything's kind of under that first responder now, that emergency medical responder. Or the sports first responder, so we don't have to do that EMT stuff anymore.
Gotcha. Was there like a period when you first came on where you were like, this is Dawn, our trainee, like she's not yet,
Yeah, so at Mystère specifically, there's a rescue called Fifth Pole, and it's a Chinese pole that's literally like two stories in the air, and you have to harness up. And you're literally like launched up there on a like a cherry picker, and then you like do your C spine, and then you and the victim come down together, and it's all automated on like a special platform. And I remember being, I'm not scared of heights, obviously, but I remember being terrified because everybody's watching. They're all like, oh, this is Dawn. She's the new physio. She's got to learn this so she can cover the show. Because we physically go to certain places in the show and watch to be ready in case there's an accident. And so, yeah, I just remember being terrified. And also, like, I'm the one running the little cherry picker, and I'm like, it shakes. And I was like, oh my God, they're going to see me shaking. But it all turned out well. I mean, definitely that first one, once you get the first one under your belt, much better. I actually remember one of the guys, one of the technicians, his name's Pee Wee. And
Good
I
name.
remember him like looking at me from the stage. He's like, you got this, you got this. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. So, like, yeah, it's
Yeah.
helpful. It's very, I mean, that's one thing. It's definitely a team. Like, there's an emergency response team. So they're very collaborative. They're very supportive. Like, plus the technicians at that point had done this like how many times in their sleep. So,
Right. Yeah, you're going into a good little family there. I mean, you can't have a good response to an emergency unless you do have a good team, obviously.
yeah, that's really true. Everybody just is very cooperative. They all want to help. A lot of times the technicians will ask to be part of the emergency team,
That's great.
because they know the artists, they want to help. They
Of
don't want to
course.
just stand by, which actually, if that's your job, that's your job, just to stand by. But yeah, a lot of the technicians enjoy, maybe enjoy is not the right word,
Right.
like to help.
That's great. That's great. I mean, I imagine these drills too. I mean, it sounds like they're incredibly specific. Is there
Yeah.
any kind of ongoing training? Like, do you all meet like once a month to go over certain things?
Every show's a little bit different how they manage, because it's definitely like the technical side and the PMED side have to collaborate. Like, I remember at Mystère, when we got a new platform for Under the Trampoline, it was a huge process that we had to like go train it because it was really heavy. On tour, we probably had a meeting once a month to just kind of debrief and make sure we weren't missing anything, like especially because we were in a new like arena or a new theater, just to make sure we knew, okay, this is where the exit route is, this is who's going to hold the door or the elevator. So on tour, it was probably every single city. We definitely had a, before anybody would train, we'd practice all the emergency procedures, like our
Right.
tech day.
Right.
And I would say on that tour, we would meet with technical, like the TD and the GSM, the general stage manager, and go over all the specifics before we even went and practiced. In
Awesome.
Vegas, not so much changes on the resident shows, but I would say every show, like I said, is a little different. I would say like probably once a month they go over technical specifics.
Nice,
If
nice.
there's any changes.
Out of curiosity, did you have any experience with like aerial work or any of the apparatus before you started at Cirque?
No,
No.
I've never been on a trapeze. I mean, and the atmosphere, I had to, like, there's a trapeze cradle, and let's say the catcher is hurt, like, which we actually had in New York, actually, our catcher got hurt. So we had to get them off of the swing. So again, there's another procedure to get you up to that height, to evaluate them, to pull them down, get them safely down. So no, I'd never been up there. And actually, they make you practice as the victim. So
Wow.
like the first time I'm sitting on that trapeze swing, like sweaty palms, like, oh my God, don't look at the audience. Like, it's very high. Like, just look straight ahead, look at the other guys. They're just at your same level. Yeah, I mean, it's good. Because I need to learn what it's like to be the victim as well.
Sure, of course. And I imagine too, like this is going more towards the PT rehab type of it too. It's like I imagine it's incredibly useful to get in the apparatus as well to understand how you have to
Yes.
use your body.
Yes. I mean, and totally off subject, but if the catcher, he was out for a long time when I was on tour because he'd had the big injury. But going back to that structure, it was mentally quite challenging for him.
Of course.
He's not scared of heights, but just being up there again, it
Right.
was quite a challenge. And that's, not really my realm as a PT, but we had to take that into account, like his mental,
Of course, mental state.
he just needed to get used to it.
For sure, for sure. Okay, so when we spoke previously, you talked about how highly choreographed and specific your emergency action plans were. Can you walk us through, some of the players and what those look like for you guys?
Yep, so every show is a little bit different, but physio or performance medicine, the PTs, the ATs, they're the ones driving the rescue. So somebody gets hurt, let's say they're on stage unconscious. PMED gets the okay to go on stage from a stage manager. So you can't just go on stage. That what if something's moving? Like some of the shows have water. Like you can't just like,
Sure.
oh my God, he's down. I'm running on stage like football, where you can like just run on and they're gonna manage.
Can I ask you a quick question before you go on?
Yeah.
PMed, performance med?
Yes.
Okay,
So
great.
that's just the whole because we work with so many international physiotherapists, athletic therapists, athletic trainers, physical therapists. The whole group is just called performance medicine.
Nice.
Sorry,
Okay.
PMed.
No problem. No problem. Just want to
Sorry.
make sure. Okay.
So we run on, we do our assessment, and let's say we need to do a show stop or a show pause, whatever it is, we tell our communicator, who is also right there, who is typically a stage manager. Some shows, it's maybe the deck carpenter or the deck electric, like whoever is available. And then the communicator's job is to relay information. Show's stopping. This is what we're going to do. Band needs to continue to play if it's during a show. This is what lights we go to. If there's a curtain, the curtain goes down. A lot of the circus shows don't have curtains. So there's all this choreographed pieces, and the communicator will trigger the emergency action plan. So, like, once PMUD says, okay, we're going to do this. This is a rescue. Communicator will say, okay, emergency action plan. And that triggers all of the rescue team to come to that site. And then the information, like if we're calling an ambulance, which most likely we are, artist, 22-year-old female, unconscious, blah, 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 blah. So that information is relayed to 911. The whole plan is to get the victim, the artist, to the rendezvous spot where we meet the ambulance before they come to site. So that they don't come on stage and kind of like mess everything up,
Sure.
kind of.
Right.
So communicators, the emergency team comes down. They're basically our hands. They bring all the equipment. All the equipment is checked usually weekly. And then basically the physio just runs the rescue. I need a C collar. I need a spine board. Here's how we're going to manage them. Whatever position, if there's a apparatus that needs to be moved, let's say like a swing, something that needs to be moved out of the way, that's all choreographed. The communicator and stage management will all know those details because that's all detailed out while the emergency team is tending to the victim. And then there's actually, it's so specific that there's like a exit route. Let's say there's an elevator, you might be on the high level, you might be under the stage, like whatever. So that's all choreographed as well. Who's holding the doors? Like they all have to go to that spot as soon as they hear that emergency action plan has been activated. Here's where the victim is. You go to your spots. And like I said, sometimes your spot is to go to the training room. Let's say you're an artist getting ready to go on stage. Your job is not to stand there and watch,
Of
try to
course.
go help. Like that's not your job. Your job is to go be with wherever you're supposed to be and wait for next steps. Because they'll tell you like where the show's going to pick up or what's happening post rescue.
Sure.
So it's really important. We actually bring in artists and practice with them. Usually they don't want to be victims, but they'll watch so that they know what's going on because we don't want somebody to like wake up halfway through a rescue and then they start panicking. Like, this is normal. This is what's going to happen.
Right.
And then like we want, sometimes language is an issue. So we want them to know, okay, if this happens, you need to go here. The coach will come talk to you. They'll give you next steps. So like I said, everybody has a job. Even if your job is to stay away, that's your job.
Right. Don't get in the way. Let this happen smoothly. So the communicator is essentially like the MC, right? Which is obviously incredibly important because you need someone to be orchestrating that highly choreographed number. And then, so let's say you, Don, are the emergency responder. You're the one who's going to be going in, assessing primary, secondary assessment, yada yada, calling the shots. Who is coming with you to like go grab the spine board if you need it or the C collar?
So as soon as that trigger, that emergency action plan goes over a headset that's been initiated, the emergency team, as they come down, and those people have already been identified. They're the ones that we practice with, that we
Sure.
do the hours with, that we just do simple training, not necessarily a whole rescue, but we'll do spine boarding, oxygen administration, whatever. They're the ones, somebody has a responsibility. Like if you're on stage right and that's where the equipment is, that's your job to bring it. So like I said, all that is predetermined. And there's even, we'll even go down to some details like this person has to manage vitals, and their job is literally to just write down vitals every 1 to 2
Important.
minutes. So a lot of times the communicator will jump in and do that, but that's all very like detailed out with the emergency team.
Of course.
Because if there's like a broken leg and I'm splinting them, I don't want to really have to worry about all of that stuff on top of managing the artist. So it's super helpful to have a team that just comes in and like does. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, like, for those of us who have been in any kind of even slightly emergency moment, I mean, you know, your heart starts racing and it's hard enough to think about what's in front of you, let alone manage 50 things. So it's, yeah.
The tunnel vision is real. Like my first emergency procedure at Mystère was a trapeze rescue. And I remember getting up in the net and just being so annoyed that I could hear the music playing on loop because they were live, you know, there's live musicians and they were just playing the music over and over. And literally that night, like when I went home, when everything was done, you know, it was like 3 in the morning, hospital run is over. I could just hear that music just like,
yeah,
so
yeah,
definitely tunnel vision's real.
Yeah. Tunnel vision is real. I have a question about that, but I'm going to get to that in a second. I'm kind of curious how the audience plays into the EAPs. Are you trying to make sure that the audience is not aware of what's going on or not seeing what's going on, or how do they factor in?
I mean, so if there's no curtain, they obviously have probably seen that something has happened.
Sure.
There are different announcements that are pre-recorded. The show will, you know, resume in a few minutes. Please stay in your seats. Sometimes they'll turn the house lights on so that they can. And then the ushers are already trained to like usher them out. If the show doesn't continue on, let's say it's a massive issue, which I think a couple tours have had that actually, then the usher, the house staff is trained. Like once they hear that certain recording, then it's all okay. This is where we evacuate the house.
Sure.
But I feel like when I started with Cirque in 2004, cell phones were not really a huge thing. And now they're a huge thing. Right before I left tour, we had a big injury in Vegas. And I just remember waking up the next morning and people were like sending me all these pictures of like me on stage.
Oh,
with my blonde hair and like tell it was me.
Right.
Just I wasn't, that was the first time I'd ever experienced that where people were taking pictures of this guy being injured. So.
Different world.
It's
a little upsetting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm curious too. Like you mentioned a spine board. You mentioned a C collar. What other equipment do you have? You know, kind of off stage right, off stage left, at the ready for any emergency.
Yep. It's all. There's a pretty standard kit. So the spine boards. Depending on your apparatuses, you might use spider straps, which are the Velcro that you like undo, or you might have the quick straps, which are like lifeguard ones that look like seatbelts. I prefer the lifeguard ones because they're color coded. And I feel like in that moment, it's easy to just be like red, blue, green, like go.
Right.
Versus the spider straps, I feel like the Velcro gets messy. C collars. And then it's interesting because a lot of our females need like a pediatric C collar because they're so tiny. There's a vacuum splints, there's SAM splints, there's like all different sizes vacuum splints, by the way. Depending on what you might see, there's usually a Sager, like a femur fracture traction splint. Not all shows have that because you might not have that risk. And then depending on where you are in the theater, obviously an AED, an oxygen.
Sure.
Like bleeding. And then depending on where you are, there'll be like a stair chair. Let's say you're in the basement and the only way out is up these stairs. So there'll be a stair chair. Or even the half spine board where they're like in sitting that they use for like car excavations.
Right.
So spine boards of different sizes. There's even been like some aerial shows will have a specific spine board that's rigged that you can put the harness, because the artists are on a harness. You just put the harness right in the spine board.
Wow.
It's very unique, but because you can't cut off the harness, like it's metal. And so it's just, and plus you don't want to take the chance of like moving their spine. So you just put them in the harness in the spine board. So some unique stuff. Some of the shows have been very creative over the years with like coming up with the spine boards.
You mean in terms of like creating them, having someone?
Yeah. Because the harnesses, some of them are like rotational or air bladders. So they're basically like from the bottom of your chest bone, you know, down past your legs. You can't cut that air bladder. And plus it's like a metal ring. So,
right.
Yeah. Impossible to pull them out of it.
A couple more questions about your EAPs. Who designed your EAPs?
So usually it's PMed, it's the physio, along with the general stage manager, just because you need that like technical side of like, okay, as soon as you do this, I need to call these cues to make sure the stage, like let's say an elevator, you don't want a turntable to turn on, the lights, the music, like all these cues. So usually it's the calling stage manager, the general stage manager, who has knowledge of all the technical side.
Sure.
And then once they're written, everything's detailed out, like I said, per track. So like carp one, deck electrics one, automation one, whatever, like they all have their responsibilities, lighting, and then technical receives that information too. So it's all reviewed again, like every month, ish. I mean, some of the shows have been running for so long that they don't need to review them. There's no change, but
Right.
yeah, it's usually PMed and GSM.
That makes perfect sense. And then also, I'm wondering how your EAPs change based on if you're in a performance versus if you're in a rehearsal.
Yeah, so the biggest thing from performance to rehearsal is obviously we don't have an audience.
Right.
We can use all the lights. So like if there's no curtain, they usually don't turn on all the lights. There's certain lights that they'll turn on, but that's probably the biggest thing. Like all of a sudden you're in work lights and you don't have to manage the audience. The other thing is, you know, sometimes there's a different technical team during the day for training versus shows. So, at resident shows specifically, not tour because it's the same ones, but on resident shows, we would train with day crew as well. And I would say it's probably a little bit cleaner with day crew. You don't have to worry about all the different automation cues. You just have to worry about lights and moving the victim to the rendezvous spot. So, just different. But for physios, we have to train both day crew and show crew. So we have kind of two emergency teams on the bigger shows, the resident shows.
Second to last question I have for you. I mean, this is just like kind of going back to what you were saying before of like after your hospital run of and you're home and you hear the music on loop in your head. I mean, like you said like you just said that this particular injury wasn't like where not everything is super horrible, but it does take a toll on you. Like, how do you deal with your mental health and wellness as an emergency responder?
So that specific one was my first one, right? So it was very like adrenalined up, and I don't think like I realized all that was happening. And you know, it wasn't a horrible injury, it was an injury that he couldn't continue on. But what helped me the most with that is we always do a debrief with all the kind of big players, like the technical side, the TD, the head carp, the head GSM. So all these other physios on my team, even my boss sometimes would join in. And I know people hate doing like the, it's called the postmortem, which is a horrible name, but I know people don't like it, but for me it was really helpful to like go through that because then I just felt better prepared for the next time. Like, oh, I could have done this better. I could have done this. And I know people hate doing that, but for me it totally just kind of put everything in perspective. I could put like a nail or a pin in it, you know, and like, okay, I'm done with that. Here's where I'm moving on. So and especially because that was, you know, early on in my career. So it was very helpful for me to learn from my own mistakes. Just making, just being more efficient and, you know, whatever it was. Like I know that one specifically, the feedback was you weren't talking loud enough because the music was playing. And like for me, I thought I was talking very loud, very fast. And just to hear that feedback, okay, I can be louder next time. Like that's easy. But they have, you know, they have their headsets on, you know, and I don't have headset. I just had a radio. It's very helpful, like those little things for me. So
absolutely.
as far as like actual mental health, I mean, yeah, I don't really have any good things, but
I
that was
mean,
just something that helped
that's
me.
yeah, that's super good, right? Because you're like, okay, assured that what went wrong can be corrected. What you thought might have gone wrong actually went okay, and like there's some security in that. And then I'm sure like, if contact with the performer too, or if he came back is reassuring as well. All that jazz.
Actually, and the probably more severe injuries, like just being involved or like talking to the artist or even the artist's family, like their wife, their husband, whatever, has been very helpful. Like knowing, I mean, knowing they're going to be okay eventually. Yeah,
That's
that's
great.
been helpful.
And lastly, before we sign off, I'm sure you've piqued some of our listeners' interests in terms of like, oh goodness, like maybe I should. I mean, not every show is Cirque, right? Not every performing arts, genre is like Cirque du Soleil. But where would you suggest some of our listeners go to get more information on emergency medical response?
I mean, the sports first responder is very, very helpful. And there's actually There's a couple different programs internationally, like Lubas, Lubas. You can find them on LinkedIn. They're out of the UK and they do quite a good, like rugby is their big sport. So they do a lot of like the game is still going on and you're doing an emergency. I don't know if you know about rugby. So, and then obviously, like I said, the sports first responder is really good. That's what we continue on with. Or the professional first responder, they're very similar. I think those are probably very helpful because even if you learn like first aid or splinting or spine boarding, it's very helpful to keep practicing it, which obviously we do at the circus. But even when I was on tour with tennis, every new tournament we would try to practice that with our doctor because we had a different doctor at every tournament. So I think just not only learning the skills, but continuing to practice them is very helpful for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Don, thank you for your time and for sharing your expertise with our listeners. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you. It was
Of
fun.
course.
Woo-hoo.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to PASIG Practice Pearls, created by the Performing Arts Special Interest Group of the APTA Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy.